Du lytter til Investering på Hjernen, en podcast om investering og det, der foregår i hovedet, når du investerer. Velkommen til et nyt afsnit af Investering på Hjernen. I dag skal jeg snakke med Christoph Merkle fra Aarhus Universitet, og det betyder også, at resten af vores dialog den kommer til at være på engelsk. Welcome, Christoph, to my podcast. I'm very happy to have you here.
Yes, I'm also happy to be on your program.
I have something that I call my quick round. So I'll give you two options and you just have to say which you prefer. Coffee or tea?
Tea.
Coca-Cola or Pepsi?
Coca-Cola.
Do you think you could taste the difference if you were in the blind test?
I know it's hard, but I would give it a try.
Optimism bias, right? You think I would say the same thing. I don't ever drink.
Yeah,
Pepsi.
Well, you didn't ask me about my confidence level. Yeah, so maybe no. I would say 60% that I get it.
If you listen to music, is it rock or pop?
Both.
Both. And if you are reading, is it fiction or nonfiction?
Rather fiction.
Rather fiction. It's,
there is enough nonfiction in my daily life. Yeah. So.
Okay. And when you're going from A to B, do you prefer to drive your car or go by bicycle or what do you?
Well, if possible, by bicycle. But the Danish weather does not allow this all the time.
And yes, and you are living in Aarhus, yes?
Yes. In
yeah. Yeah. Well, it's not the weather is never bad. It's just whatever you choose to wear that can be a bad choice. I'm always being told that.
Yeah, that's what I hear. But still, when you are used to bike only in sunny weather, then it takes some adjustment. To hear.
I totally follow you. I know exactly what you're saying. When the day is over, what do you like, Netflix or do you exercise?
Nowadays, rather Netflix, because then the kids wear you down over the day, yeah.
So it's because you're on paternity leave, or?
Yes, it is.
So dog or cat?
Dog.
Both? Do you have both?
So the maternal grandparents have dogs. Yeah. Mm.
So when you invest, are you short or long-sighted yourself?
I'm long-sighted.
And if you choose to invest in equities, are you stock picking or do you go by investment funds?
I go by ETFs mainly.
Yeah, which is like an investment fund.
Yes.
More or less, yes.
More or less, yeah.
Well, that was my quick round. Now we know a little bit about you. Du lytter til Investering på Hjernen. Husk at abonnere, så du ikke går glip af et afsnit. But of course, let's talk more about you. Your background, what is that?
Well, I'm an economist by training, and then specialized to finance during my PhD. And that's what I've done ever since.
So you said specialized to finance. When did the behavioral finance come into your view?
More or less right away. I was always interested in questions how real human beings trade and invest in financial markets. Because I was rather skeptic about some of the models we are using and whether that really fits to the beliefs and preferences of real people. Yeah, so that was probably what got me interested in behavioral finance and also household finance, which primarily deals with financial decisions of private households.
So you're not that keen on like homo economicus, I guess.
Yeah, well, I think that is a straw man. Yeah, so I wouldn't bring this concept up any longer, because I think in the meantime we more or less all agree that people are not a homo economicus, and we have, I think, in the past 20, 30 years replaced that model by a more realistic view of human beings.
Oh, that's very good to hear, because he was very much alive when I did my HD in Aarhus as well. And we talked about the homo economicus. But I'm glad to hear that he's been sent into retirement.
We always need, of course, some of these rational benchmarks to really think about what sets our theories apart from how a standard rational agent would behave.
Yeah, of course. What did you do your PhD in? Was that a special topic or?
I'm not sure whether all the parts of the PhD fit under one topic, because it was not a book that I have written, but rather a collection of essays. And then it's somewhat difficult to find a common denominator. So there was, I think, a strong notion of overconfidence in at least two of the articles I was doing for my PhD. Yes.
So overconfidence in investing, or?
Yes. One was a methodology article generally about overconfidence, and the other one was really about overconfidence in investing, because we had a special data set where we had a combination of investors' accounts and could see their real trades, and then on top of that had a panel survey every quarter with these investors. And so we could directly make the link between what investors believe and then what they do in their investments. And that was very, very interesting. And really allowed me to look into the overconfidence they have in their beliefs, and then how that reflects in their portfolios.
Interesting. What other findings have you been looking into? I know you've been looking into something about investors in general when we invest, if we have biases in different directions.
So I've worked then over the years on different biases or preferences. Loss aversion, for example, was a topic, and whether people are loss averse only when it comes to their expectations, when it comes to lotteries, that is how this is often measured, or whether loss aversion is also a thing after you have experienced a loss. So that was maybe also one quite intriguing result, that there is a real difference between the two things. Yeah. So,
Can you?
So I think I've made my way through a number of these topics that come up a lot in behavioral finance.
I have to ask you this, Christoph. Did you find a difference between having a loss in a lottery or having a loss in investing?
That was not the main distinction. The main distinction was whether loss aversion is something that primarily affects future gains and losses versus how we cope with losses in our portfolios. And there's where the difference comes in. So people are loss averse also for their investments when you ask them, what probability are there for future gains and losses? And then they weight these potential losses much higher than the gains. However, once a loss has occurred and you can contextualize this loss, because maybe it was during the financial crisis, you lost 20-30%, then people cope rather well with these losses. So it does not have this weight of two times again that you typically have for loss aversion, but it's rather close to one. Yeah, so it really, the loss experience, as I call it, is different from the loss aversion you have before an event.
So the loss experience in your research is pretty much like the gain experience. They are the same.
Right. So there is no significant difference between the sensitivity towards a gain or loss that you experience. Yes. Mm.
Interesting. And now you are doing, or you have started submitting a paper on affect heuristic and financial expectations. I had to find the title to read it aloud. Could you walk us through this shortly?
Yes, of course. So the affect heuristic is a concept from psychology where you rate the characteristics of an object coming from the first affective impression. So you feel either positive or negative about something. And then if I ask you specifically about benefits or risks of this object, then you derive these judgments from this first affective impression.
And so let me make an example out of the financial world. So if I like Porsche, so I like that, and you ask me if it's a nice car to drive because I like it, I will say that it's nicer. Is that correct?
It is not about issues that you have perhaps experienced. So if you have driven a Porsche, then you can refer to your personal experience about it. Yeah? So then you don't need the effect heuristic. It's more if I ask you then some more abstract things about the company, whether you think it's well run or whether you think the returns of the stock will be high, then you derive that from your positive impression you have about the car, because that's your point of reference, and that is what gives you that positive effect about Porsche, and then everything else then follows from that.
Okay. So how does this affect us when investing? What were your findings?
So I did this in an experiment with real investors where they were asked for their return expectations and their risk perceptions for certain stocks. And these were well-known stocks taken from the Dow Jones Index. So these are the 30 largest and most well-known companies in the US. And so most people know these companies, know these stocks. And then they submit their return expectation, risk expectations, and the outcome is that the correlation between the two is strongly negative. Yeah, so stocks for which people expect a high return, they at the same time expect low risk, and vice versa, of course. And then the problem is that what financial theory tells us about the risk-return trade-off, it's exactly the opposite. So high risk should be linked to high return and low risk to low return.
We all want to invest in high returns with low risk, so we sort of want to find that, but it doesn't exist in financial theory, and I haven't seen it out there yet. So the risk is somewhere in there, so I agree on that. But they expect the high return, and then they also think there's a low risk, is what your findings were.
Right. And well, of course, that can explain why many people like to pick stocks, because then they have the impression that there are some stocks out there which combine pretty positive characteristics. Yeah, so if you, you can construct a portfolio with high return and low risk out of these. And that is also why you want to exclude some of the other stocks. You perhaps don't want to be diversified over the whole spectrum of stocks that is out there, because you have the belief that there are some really bad stocks and you should be able to sort these out.
Du lytter til Investering på Hjernen. Find alle de gamle episoder i din favorit podcast afspiller eller se mere på investeringpohjernen.dk. Did your research show anything why people had these high expectations about some companies? Is it because they know them better, or are there any special indications?
Yes, you can, of course, look at what kind of stocks are those that people have the most positive expectations. And then in the universe of this Dow Jones index, these are stocks like Apple, Microsoft, Coca-Cola. So some of the stocks where these are brands that people interact with a lot, that they have positive feelings about. Where there are some others, for example, B2B companies, which are less frequently in the public space, they don't give you such a strong effective reaction, which means that you judge them more neutrally. Yeah.
Mm. But that doesn't come directly out of your data. That's a way you are interpreting.
Yeah, so you cannot pin that down. I mean, that is just by inspection of what kind of stocks you have. Yes. That fits that story. I mean, I have one condition where people select the five stocks they like most and the five stocks they dislike most. And this condition exacerbates this use of the effect heuristic, so the correlations get even stronger, and of course you then see in the sample of stocks people like and the sample of stocks people dislike what kind of stocks are these again. So that is some corroborating evidence on that.
So does it lead to something special? Do they end up with higher risk portfolios? Do they end up with lower returns? Or is it just a way of looking at how they have chosen their portfolios?
Yes, at this point, I mean, these are experimental studies with hypothetical investments. So, of course, we know if we look into real investor portfolios, they also have a tilt towards these relatively popular stocks. And of course, it can be sometimes difficult to show that this has a negative consequences for the investing, because some of these stocks, as we know, they did quite well over the past couple of years. Yeah, so that is why I would be cautious to say, well, if you follow this strategy, you will have inferior returns or something like this. But what is for sure is that you will be less diversified than if you just buy the whole Dow Jones or the whole S&P 500 or an even larger global index. Yeah, so.
Which is a something that we see a lot, that people are too little diversified in their portfolios. A lot of research have shown that over time.
Yes, right. And I propose that one reason behind this under diversification is that we believe that with very little effort, that is also important to mention. So this effect heuristic provides us with a more or less effortless response here. So very quick, you get an impression about which stocks you think are good, which stocks you think are bad, and that is why many people will go by that first impression.
A lot of investors, especially private investors, they are not going to look into the figures and the numbers behind every investment that they do. A lot of times they just hear about something and they think, oh, that sounds nice, maybe because they like the company beforehand, or maybe because they like what they are doing in the company. So I think that the effect heuristic is it at work a lot of times when people are investing, because they have these positive feelings about their portfolio and what they put into the portfolio.
Yes. Yeah. So that's what I believe as well. And there has been another paper out there claiming that is a false interpretation of this invest in what you know principle. So you probably know about this, that of course a good investment advice is that you should only invest in what you know. But some people interpret it that way, that because they know their local Starbucks, that gives them already enough investment acumen that they then should go and buy some Starbucks stock, which is of course not what invest in what you know means.
That's true, but we like to invest in what we know. I mean, home bias is a way of looking into this. So do we make this a mistake when we invest in other assets as well? Do you know of that?
Well, I have run another treatment with asset classes, where instead of individual stocks, people submit expectations for stocks versus government bonds versus savings accounts, real estate, etc. And this exercise, the effect heuristic has no impact. Yeah, so that means that when dealing with asset classes, people are aware that there is a risk-return trade-off, and while stocks are more risky, they presumably will also deliver higher returns. And there, this is about the interplay between the two systems we are often talking about, the intuitive, effective system one, and the more cognitive, effortful system two. And there, the idea would be that for asset classes, you recognize, your cognitive system recognizes that there has to be this risk-return trade-off. Whereas with individual stocks, it can be difficult when you judge one stock and then you judge another, whether you are making a systematic mistake there.
A stock is a stock, something some investors think, and even though if it's just a stock quoted on First North here in Denmark, or if it's a stock that's in a large index like the OMX index, some think it's the same risk because it's a stock, but they are at a different or different level of existence of stocks, so you have different risks, of course. But I can surely imagine that people have difficulties doing that.
Yeah, well, it's of course easier to compare each of these stocks to a government bond, and then everyone would agree, okay, these are riskier than the government bond.
Yeah.
And then if you narrow that down then to two stocks, then you should also still be able to see differences there. Yeah, but it's perhaps more difficult.
Yeah. And perhaps for bond investors, it also exists for them that they have preferences and they have types of bonds or types of lenders that they prefer to invest in.
Du kan lære mere om investorpsykologi i bogen Lad Hulemænd Investere af Jens Balle. Find den på averagejoe.dk eller i din boghandel.
So we think that the stocks or the investments that we like, they have higher returns and lower risks than comparable alternatives. That could be one conclusion on your paper, or is that how you see it as well?
Yes, that's how I see it. And then, so there are, of course, then other things that also relate to that. Yeah. So in an add-on to that paper, I also look into sustainability, which is, of course, another hot topic in the moment. And where one could also ask, how do people make judgments about sustainability, ESG? And so if you have the effect heuristic in mind, then of course it predicts that every characteristic then is derived from this effective impression. So that would then mean, even if I ask you for sustainability of a certain company, then this comes at least partly from this effective impression you have. And then that results again in some correlations here that people typically expect high returns and good sustainability records to go together. Yeah, so because these are both positive aspects, and of the companies we like, we believe that they score high on these positive aspects.
So it's overall that we have this way of seeing companies that we like in a more positive light than others. So it's the figures, it's the return, it's the risk, it's things like ESG as well.
Yes, and and then the question is whether you consult additional information to back this up, or whether you just stay on that level of personal impressions. Yeah. So of course there are many ESG ratings out there, and then probably it's not easy for us, when asked about a certain company, how good are they in terms of sustainability? So then I would perhaps shrug my shoulders and say, well, I have to look into that before I can answer that. But when prompted, of course, people will give you a response, and that will align with their overall impression.
Hmm. Very, very interesting. And nice to also knowing that the research that you have done is saying it's like this, because it very well fits into what I've experienced within the 25 years I've been advising investors on what to invest in, because I've met this a lot of times where people think positively and think there's low risk on the investments. So I believe it's like this.
Du lytter til Investering på Hjernen med Jens Balle.
almost at the end, Christoph. I have just a few more questions. What is your own best and worst investment?
Yeah, well, in the beginning, I told you I'm an ETF investor, so therefore there is not much in terms of a stock pick that I did that went really well. I would rather say that the best investment was one particular ETF. It was a small cap US ETF that performed exceptionally well, but behind that is not any insight that I have on US small caps. It's just part of a broader, well-diversified portfolio.
And you have always invested like that?
Well, more or less. I mean, during my times as a student, there was not so much money to invest. Yeah, so that means my investments went along as I got more experienced in what we are doing. But there are, of course, still, I mean, you also ask for the worst investments, things that can happen. Therefore, will not share a story that goes back 20 years and where I now say, well, now I'm the wiser. But I can just tell you about something that went wrong last year when I thought I would be smart. And that is always the point where it gets dangerous. When you think you are particularly smart and have understood something that other people have not yet understood. And this was with inflation. So back in 2021, I thought, okay, inflation is going up and I think that will continue. And why should I not buy some inflation-indexed government bonds? Seems a pretty safe bet there. And I was right on the first part. So inflation really went further up, especially this year. But still, the investment is down 10%. Yeah. So and then, then you have to reflect on that. Okay, what went wrong here? And well, the second part was probably where I was wrong. So I should have done my due diligence and see how these bonds were actually priced. So what are the expectations that are already priced in? And then what we see now is, of course, that fixed income took a hit across the board, rising interest rates, etc. And of course, the inflation index bonds were not accepted from that. So in the end, so this went down as well. And yeah, so here, and the general principle is as soon, if you think you have found some smart idea there it gets dangerous. You should probably ask yourself whether other market participants have not figured that out as well.
That is always a good question to ask yourself. And sometimes yourself will tell you, they have not, I'm the only one who knows this. And that is when it goes wrong. But thank you for your honest sharing of your especially worst investment. I have to ask you one question. Did you do that in an ETF as well?
No. Were just straight.
So you found a bond that did that, yeah?
Exactly, yes.
Yes, good. So do you have any suggestions for my listeners on a book or on either investing or investment psychology or financial behavior that you will suggest?
Yeah, so I liked a lot the book Misbehaving by Richard Thaler. And it is not so much a book on how you should invest or giving you investment tips or advice, but rather on how the discipline of behavioral economics and behavioral finance involved. And well, I I have to admit, you probably enjoy it more when you are in that field of academia and acquainted with the people involved there and also the theories, of course. But I think that everybody can get something out of it. Richard Thaler is a Nobel Prize laureate and has contributed a lot to behavioral econ.
I think it's a very good book, and he has those anecdotes about how they found out some of the theories and how they work with them. I very much enjoyed it. I sometimes mix it up with the one that Michael Lewis wrote. Michael Lewis, on Thaler and Kahneman. Have you read that?
I've read that as well. Yeah, that's also very interesting. On the characters of
exactly
the two.
And Thaler has some of the characters in his book as well, where he tells the tales of how they did things.
That's why
I mix them up. But I like Miss.
But Brian, I would say book. Thaler's book is more finance-y. Yeah. So Kahneman, Tversky, they are more on that general level of heuristics, biases, econ, whereas Thaler gets also a bit in the detail on some finance stuff.
Yeah. I will pass that on to my listeners in the show notes so they can read Misbehaving if they want to. So you already touched a little on this. Do you have an advice you would give your 25-year-old on investing?
Yeah, well, that's about the age my students are. Yeah, so and I think they are currently under the impression that we are at times of crisis. So coming from the pandemic, going into the war, energy crisis, inflation, and then there is of course the climate crisis as another large crisis looming over us, and then. The conclusion from that could be now is not a good time to invest. Yeah, maybe you wait until the sky clears up and at a later a day. But that is something I would discourage because, well, we talked mainly about stock picking and the pitfalls that exist there. But also market timing is generally something that does not work. And the best advice I would think is to set up a savings plan where you continuously save a certain amount so that you save in up markets and in down markets so that you are not exposed to the risk that you pick a particular bad time for putting your money into the stock market.
A lot of people think that they can do the market timing and that they can perform better if they buy cheap and sell high, which of course sounds like it's a good way to do it. But when it's cheap, you get scared. And when it's high, you want to buy more instead of doing what should maybe be the right thing to do at those times. If the feelings, they can really mess us up. That's my experience.
Yeah, it has been shown that especially retail investors do actually opposite market timing. So they tend to sell low and to buy high because they tend to jump on the train when it's already running. Yeah, so at a relatively late point in time. And then, they often at the low point, they give up. Yeah, and that then is actually the opposite of what you would.
Yeah. Do you have any knowledge of those students of yours, if they are already investing? A lot of people talk about students going into investments during Corona. And so maybe they have been taking big hits lately. Do you know of that?
Especially in my lecture on behavioral finance, I sometimes ask people, what they invest in, and so you get some you get a lot of different responses. Yeah, so some more along the line they have figured out they have some diversified funds. Others have these stocks we were talking about, but then others are in the cryptocurrency field. Yeah, which also seemed smart for a while. I don't know. I haven't run my lecture after we had now these. These very negative returns in on Bitcoin and other currencies. So whether anyone would admit nowadays that they are investing in crypto. Yeah. So but yeah. So there's a lot of variation in what people do.
Maybe next time you have to include the cryptos in your investigation when you're looking at the effect heuristics, because I think they might very much be involved there as well, but
I have them as an asset class actually in that asset class treatment, and there people really say, okay, Bitcoin is high risk and high return, so they realize the risk that is behind that, and I think that's that's in line with this.
So that's in line. Okay. Yeah. Well, Christoph, thank you very much for spending half an hour with me here on this afternoon. I hope my listeners will find this as interesting as I have. I love to learn new about investing and how people look at it. I'm going to send you a cup investment on the brain so you can enjoy your tea, I guess it was, in it. I don't know if it will stain the cup on the inside because I only use it for coffee. But I will send you that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Du har lyttet til Investering på Hjernen. Mit navn er Jens Balle, og denne episode var redigeret af Emil Mantai.